As I said, John Latimer is away today. That means we get a chance to have Charlie Mitchell join us, our phenology coordinator. Morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Phenology Tuesday.
Yeah. Here we are. So we mention you on Tuesday mornings because you create these phenology talkbacks, and this course, this phenology segments are made possible in part by the Minnesota Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. What does that mean? What does it mean to like be working with schools and kids and then the actually getting these reports together every week?
Oh, I mean, right now it particularly means a lot, I think, this year. It's a lot of hope, hearing these kids getting outside, looking at nature. I know how much of how much solace I can find in nature during, you know, hard and chaotic times. Mm-hmm. And these have been hard and chaotic times. And it means a lot that, you know, all of these kids, whether we hear their voices or not, are being encouraged to get out and look around and hopefully find some joy and delight and solace in nature, just as I do. Care about their environment, which is important to me.
You know, it was like we had heard from one of our members earlier that, you know, you feel like you're not alone when you tune into KXE. Same with like hearing someone comment about nature, like, oh, I saw that too, or I could see that, you know, or I'm understanding something. And it reminds me of, you know, pandemic times, how much nature meant to people. For some people, it was the first time they really understood that like slowing down a little bit, getting outside actually could make a difference in their life. So as I try to explain what we do at KXE to folks, you know, if I'm traveling or at conferences, you know, certainly it is about science and learning about science and the environment and climate and all of these things, but it's also this connection and sort of solace that nature can bring too. So just talking about it is almost weirdly meditation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know, there's something about, you know, I live 3 hours away from you guys down here in Stillwater, Minnesota. And there is something where you can be together, even though you're so far apart, when you're both looking for the same things and seeing the same seasons change. And maybe the plants and animals are a little bit different here than they are there. But yeah, there's a togetherness about that that I think is very pandemic-like.
Yeah. So how does it actually happen? I mean, how we've got a big network now of classrooms around the state. How do you stay connected to the teachers? How did they get involved in the first place? I mean, I know these are big questions and we've got some students to be listening to soon, but, you know, I think a lot of people wonder like, how the heck did you do this?
A lot of this is word of mouth. You know, we talk about being people powered radio, and that is absolutely true for phenology program too. Many of our classroom connections come from listeners or who have a local school and want them to be involved and get their teachers in touch with us. And here we go. You know, John and I also do, you work with, you know, Minnesota Master Naturalists and other groups to try to pull different people in. But our listeners are, as always, our best asset, our members. Yeah, and so once we hear from a teacher that they're interested, I send them some onboarding documents about how to, you know, I'm not a teacher. I can't help them at all with how to manage a classroom when they're outside. Mm-hmm. But the good thing is they're experts. They know how to do that. But we can get them some material about how to record a report and how to send it in to us. And I do a little bit of editing and off John goes.
All right. On that note, let's get started this morning.
All right. And our first report comes from Lindsay Engel's class at North Star Elementary School in Virginia.
This is Evelyn,
Kenzie,
Charles,
Olivia,
Sadie,
Maddie.
September 22nd, 2025. This week, we noticed that about 10% of the leaves on the silver maple trees across the street of our school have turned yellow. The red maples in the area have gotten really bright red. The paper birch and the aspens are turning yellow too.
Zoe noticed that the leaves of the white oaks in her neighborhood are turning brownish orange and are falling already. She also noticed lobster mushrooms and chanterelles popping up. The forest is a beautiful place to be right now.
Evelyn noticed that the petals on the purple cone flowers in our schoolyard are falling off.
Kenzie noticed some of the three-year-old needles have fallen off the red pines and are on the ground. Levi noticed several leaves are falling off of our red maple trees. He noticed that the leaves have fallen first from the top of the tree.
Sadie noticed that the needles on the tamarack trees are starting to turn orange.
Thank you, kids. Yep. Lots of good notes there. Pine needles are starting to fall. We've got, I always find that a very beautiful time of year when all of the three-year-old pine needles start to fall and you get this beautiful, like, orangey bronze blanket on the floor. And silver maples are starting to turn. I live right near the St. Croix River, and so on that floodplain, we have a lot of silver maples. And instead of turning all yellow like some of the sugar maples or other ones, they kind of will turn, a couple of them will turn yellow, they'll drop, so the tree will still appear green. And they keep doing that throughout fall until the only ones left are yellow. And then the riverbed gets that kind of yellow color. Purple cone flowers. One thing I've noticed this week among all the reports are students are seeing a lot of mushrooms and fungi. So that is a fun thing to hear. And our next report this morning comes from Lori Lagergren's class at St. Joe's in Grand Rapids.
Hello, this is
Elsie
and Mabel reporting from St. Joseph's School in Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
This week in our school yard, our birch trees, red maple, and big-toothed aspen have all had less than 10% change in color.
The tamarack tree hasn't started to change. We expect it will soon.
The last monarch we have spotted was on September 18th.
We found an inky cap mushroom. We brought it into our classroom and put it in a plastic bag. Over the weekend, it turned into a bag of black liquid or ink.
The white pine needles have been dropping.
At Landon's house and Elliot's house, which are different lakes, they have noticed a lot of dead fish washing up on shore.
Avery has found a lot of acorns fallen.
Four bears, a mom, and three cubs were running through Riley's yard. His mom also spotted a bobcat eating a robin.
Mabel spotted at least four black squirrels running around together by her oak tree.
The bunnies in Ella's yard are super fat.
Until next time,
be observant, responsible, and adventurous outside.
I love that tagline. Be observant, responsible, and adventurous outside. Indeed. Responsible and adventurous can sometimes be hard to do both, at least for me. Great notes there. Big toothed aspen, less than 10% change in color. Last monarch they spotted was on September 18th. And that was something that, you know, we try to keep track of across all of our classrooms. Lasts are hard to keep track of because in the spring you always notice your first butterfly because you haven't seen any. But lasts, you don't know unless you've written it down, which sighting is going to be your last one. So last one was September 18th there, an inky cap mushroom. Those are awesome. You'll see these splotches of ink, you know, in your lawn. They're very common sometimes, like in landscaping near a business. And I'm reading a book right now called Entangled Life, which is all about fungi. Mm. And all of the illustrations in the book are done with inky cap ink.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is, yeah.
It's, you know, I've had people asking me what is going on? It seems like there's more mushrooms than ever this year.
It's been a particularly good year for the mushrooms. I think the warm weather, but still cool nights means that there's, you know, all this humidity in the air that then condenses overnight into the dew and everything. That gives you a lot of moisture for the fungi to work with. And then the warm weather just helps them grow their little fruiting bodies a lot more easily. And yeah, it's been a great year for mushrooms. I've been finding a lot.
Hey, what's the name of that book again you just mentioned?
Entangled Life.
Okay. That sounds great.
I'm going to go double check in a minute, but I'm pretty sure it's Entangled Life. Yeah, they also saw juncos. I have not seen a dark-eyed junco yet. Those are going to be our some winter residents that come down south for the winter. And a flock of 200 birds is pretty impressive. And our next report comes from Lee Jackson and Darcy Rolfe's class at North Shore Community School near Duluth.
Hello from the North Shore Community School on the north shore of Lake Superior. My name is Azalea, and I am your phenologist for this week. On September 21st, Azalea noticed that there was lots of fog. When the warm, moist air cools, it has the ability to loosen water. This is one of the indications that the weather is getting colder. On Monday, September 22nd, marked the official start of astronomical autumn. On Sunday, September 21st, Miss Jackson spotted two tall, shaggy mane mushrooms in her yard. The warm, moist conditions continue to support a variety of mushrooms and fungi growth. On Wednesday, September 24th, Eloise noticed her trees in her backyard are starting to change color, and the apples on her tree are turning red. On Thursday, September 25th, Miss Jackson's class noticed the hawthorn trees by Summit Creek on our school nature trail had bright red berries. They also saw several gilled mushrooms. On Friday, September 19th, Miss Jackson had the last hummingbird at her bird feeder. On September 23rd, Miss Jackson's class saw a flock of geese flying in a V formation on their migratory path for the winter. On September 21st, Xander saw a skunk digging holes in his yard, searching for an easy meal of insects and grubs. On September 21st, Caleb saw a monarch butterfly cocoon and saw it hatch. Miss Rolfe also saw a monarch butterfly on Sunday and a very plump monarch caterpillar in her milkweed patch. There are typically 3 to 4 generations of monarch butterflies each summer, with the first 3 generations having a short lifespan of a few weeks, the final generation born in late summer or early fall is a super generation that lives several months to complete a long migration south for the winter. This concludes the phenology report. Have a great week and be observant.
Thank you, Azalea. Great report. There's something that brings me so much joy about kids watching monarch butterflies, you know, metamorphose and hatch and fly off. That was such an important part of my childhood, the feeling of wonder. Did you do that too as you were growing up, Heidi?
I did not, but I'm starting to learn things like this as an adult. And, you know, yesterday, Jennifer and I on the morning show got to meet a woman that's going to be at the Watermark Art Center in Bemidji tomorrow night at 6, Allison Barda. You probably know that name because she is all over our Season Watch Facebook group. And her voice sounded as excited as Azalea's there, as how excited she is about documenting butterflies. And it's one of those that opened our eyes to, you know, she said most people think like, oh, monarch and maybe a couple others, you know, and that's it. Same with like last week, the last couple weeks, one of your stories on our website was about all the different dragonflies, which I have a hard time understanding as well, but I'm just starting to learn. So there's, you know, you pay attention and there's more to it.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've been learning so much just in the last 3 years working with John. You know, my background is in science, and I know my academic background taught me a lot about how to do science and how evolution works and that kind of stuff. But my education with John has been to go outside and recognize what I'm seeing, which has been a very steep learning curve. But as soon as you start looking, it's you realize how much is out there. Mm-hmm. Even trees, you know, I was looking at a forest and see a bunch of maples, and I was like, okay, there are probably, you know, 10 species of trees in this forest. Not even close.
No.
Yeah. And I've had that experience with dragonflies too. You know, I try to learn a couple and then I realize that there are, you know, 40 species. And it's just delightful that there's just all this diversity and every single species has something cool about it. Yeah, I've really enjoyed getting like a very broad, shallow view of what's going on around me. Yeah. Yeah, they saw their last hummingbird at their feeder September 19th. We've had to take our hummingbird feeder down because of the bears. But that's exciting that they got to see that and that they noticed it was their last. Skunk digging holes in the yard. We, sadly, have not seen many skunks in our area since I've been an adult. I remember skunks being a problem for our dogs when I was growing up, but I haven't seen one in a long time. I see them sometimes hit by roadkill or hit by cars on the road, but I love a skunk. I know that they're, you know, stinky, etc., but there's something so charming about them and the way that they stomp to like scare off predators before they spray. And I just love a weasel. So makes me happy that they're, you know, seeing skunks as long as no one gets sprayed.
As you do. Well, Charlie, you are going to be sitting in for John Latimer coming up for our phonology report. And then you're going to be back with us next hour. We've got more student phonology to report and you can give us some notes on that. And thank you so much. We'll check in a little bit.
Great. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks.
Our next report for the morning comes from Bram Elementary School's trip to Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade.
Hi, this is Connor.
Adeline.
And Mads from Bram Elementary School with a phonology report from Long Lake Conservation Center. During our trip on September 25th and 26th, the low temp has been 40 degrees Fahrenheit and the high was a sunny 80. White-breasted nuthatches, red-breasted nuthatches, and chickadees were busy taking turns at one of the sunflower seed bird feeders. The other feeder was full of squirrels. This seemed to be an argument worked out between the birds and squirrels. Small flocks of joncos and goldfinches were spotted on the treetops.
Chipmunks and red squirrels were running everywhere, their cheeks full of food. We noticed many leopards and wood frogs when walking on the trails. Several greater gardener snakes were out and about the forest, and the first one was entering the camp Hibernella. That usually means that cold temperatures are soon to arrive.
Bumblebees were all over the zinnias in the garden. One flower had a katydid and a bumblebee on it. We found a large number of dragonfly larvae in the lake study class and also adult dragonflies around the lake. The night skies were clear and we were able to see the North Star Cassiopeia and the Milky Way. We had a great time exploring nature and we wanted to remind everyone to unplug, get outside, and live connected!
Thank you, Connor, Adeline, Mads, great report. I particularly love their note on bumblebees. They were all over the zinnias in the garden. You know, we were talking earlier about how once you start looking at things, you discover how many different species of things there are. And bumblebees is a great example of that. The Minnesota Biological Survey went out and just looked for bumblebees in the state of Minnesota and found 503 species, I think, at the last count, of just bees in Minnesota. And I'm just still floored by that fact. There are that many just bees here.
I'm sure you also loved hearing about the garter snakes.
I do, yes. I love a snake heading to their hibernacula. They're doing the same thing here. Just up the road where I walk my dog, there's clearly some sort of hibernacula where a lot of the garter snakes gather over the winter. And September, October, unfortunately, you see a lot of them smushed on the road. but they're definitely on the move, heading somewhere cozy to hang out for the winter. That also means that, you know, all of the toads are digging down under the frost line to hang out all winter. It's just nice to think about everything kind of bedding down and getting ready for a long rest. I'm jealous.
Yeah. You know, I do want to say that the, I know we've talked about this before, but the Long Lake Conservation Center near Palisade in some way is connected to how you are here with us on KEXE. It's sort of part of your origin story. You were one of these kids, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fifth or sixth grade, Scandia Elementary, which is the elementary school I went to Long Lake Conservation Center. I got my little, you know, wood cookie with my name on it. Had a sweatshirt that was entirely too large for me, but I wore anyways for years. It's a great place. I was there last year and found my first blue-spotted salamander in the wild. Wow. And there is a picture of me holding it and looking just so, so happy. Yeah, it's a wonderful place, and I think hugely influential for the kids who get to go there. So thanks, Long Lake. Our next report this morning comes from Chad Kaditz's class at Little Falls Middle School.
This is Emma.
And Olivia.
Reporting from Little Falls Middle School. This is our phenology report for the week of September 28th.
There were swarms of male crane flies fluttering in a small cloud, trying to attract a female.
Several mushrooms popped up with the wet weather last week. People found bluets, milk caps, bullet, puffballs, russula, hen of the woods, and shaggy mates.
We're still seeing butter and eggs and several goldenrods in bloom, and we did identify some snake root that a classmate found.
The fairy rings in our yards are very noticeable as the grass around them fades in color.
Giant water bugs are leaving the ponds by our school and can be spotted near light sources in parking lots and the football field on Friday nights.
Leaf miners are fun to find and try to trace the larvae path from earlier this summer.
There have been groups of flickers and blue jays, and red and white breasted nuthatches have been very active at feeders.
Grass spiders and their funnel webs are all over our yards, and the morning dew makes them very easy to find.
We spotted a pair of painted lady butterflies who are heading south on their annual migration.
Wild cucumber and wild grapes seem to be growing on most trees, shrubs, and fences along our roads.
Similar to last year, we have started seeing lilacs that are reflowering. This is apparently a result of stress to the tree.
Box elder bugs have started to appear on the sides of our homes and garages this week.
That is our report for this week. Until next week, keep exploring, keep discovering, and keep connecting with the great outdoors.
Thank you, Emma and Olivia. Great report. I love the note on all of the mushrooms that they found. Bluets, milk caps, bolete, puffballs, russula, hen of the woods, and shaggy manes. Great names all around. We have one growing near here called the indigo milk cap, and it gets its name because if you break it off, this amazing bright blue ink color comes from wherever the mushroom is bruised. It's just a beautiful little mushroom, and if you don't break it, it's just a white mushroom that looks kind of ordinary, but, man, so many little secrets to find in fungi. And then fairy rings. Do you know about fairy rings?
No, I was actually just going to ask you that. What is a fairy ring?
So those are those mysterious little circles of mushrooms that pop up, you know, that come up in a perfect circle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they get the name fairy ring because they look like little places for fairies to dance.
Sure.
Yeah, and they're made because, you know, fungus will start in the center and grow outward. And as all of the food and nutrients in the center are depleted, the fungus will die off and it'll just keep growing outward in a circle. And so you'll see the mushroom, the fruiting bodies pop up in a circle, kind of where that living mushroom still is, mm-hmm. while there's nothing in the center.
Wow.
Yeah. Fairy ring. So useful. And then the lilacs are reflowering. That is, as they said, a result of stress to the tree. I think we've heard from a few people that their lilacs are reflowering this fall.
Yeah, I think people are really, I mean, I know there maybe isn't an answer to this. This isn't the first year I've heard people talking about this, but I think they're worried then that they're not going to bloom at the regular time next year. Mm-hmm. What the heck is going on in the universe that I have lilacs right now? Because you think of it as a springtime thing.
Absolutely. And I think we're all worried about a little bit about what's going on in the universe. The lilacs, at least, there is an explanation for.
Okay.
As soon as they're done flowering in the spring, they create the buds that will produce the next year's flowers. And so those are already set and ready. And when autumn comes and they've already been defoliated by, you know, pests or bad conditions or whatever, some of those buds are already ready to go. And with the cooler temperatures, those buds will flower, which means you'll have fewer flowers in the spring. Those won't form a new flower by spring, but they'll still flower in spring. The plant is probably fine. That part of the universe is fine. We can move on.
You know, it's an interesting thing that you said because of cooler temperatures when it feels like summer right now, but you're talking about it at nighttime. Or it had been cooler before, or, you know, just how, you know, weather and climate and how it affects all the living things around us.
Yep. You know, these fall day lengths are similar to the summer, or to the springtime day lengths. So sometimes it can trick the plant and we get blooming lilacs. And our final report this morning comes from Michelle Martin's class at Prairie Creek Community School in Northfield.
Hi, this is Hank. And this is Wyatt. And we're from Prairie Creek Community School, way down south in Northfield, Minnesota. We've got 2 weeks worth of data for you this week. Last year, we were on our class campout and we saw a ton of cool things. We saw a long-tailed giant ichneumonid wasp laying eggs in the maple with boreholes. We also saw tons of mushrooms, including giant northern tooth fungus. We drank from a spring where we saw and ate a lot of watercress. Back at school, we've been using Merlin to catch birds. We are at high migration right now. One day, we caught 29 different birds on a recording. Both weeks, we've seen sandhill cranes, turkey vultures, hummingbirds, both male and female, blue jays, waxwings, goldfinches, cardinals, and red-winged blackbirds. We're still seeing monarchs, dragonflies, and, unfortunately, mosquitoes. Merlin caught a dark-eyed junco on September 22nd and 23rd. You might have seen one, but it wasn't confirmed. This week, the box elder bugs and the assassin Asian lady beetles have arrived. We have found two giant Cecropia caterpillars here at school. And we released a monarch butterfly that have been watching since it was fourth in Star Caterpillar. Emery saw a bat in a store and it wasn't a Halloween decoration. Natalie reported the fog looks like an ocean. Our director Simon's father-in-law always watches the barns while it's in rip, and he reports that they have left for the year. Whoa, there's more, but we've got to go. This has been Prairie Creek. One more step along the phenology journey.
Thank you, Hank. Thank you, Wyatt. Great report. There is something that brings my inner scientist so much joy about. We have 2 weeks of data for you this week coming from those kids.
I know. Mwah. And assassin Asian lady beetles is the way they put it. I don't know if it was how they were pronouncing Asian, but I loved it. I don't care.
Yep, we'll take it. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
They're sort of assassins. They're out there. They stink. They're around. They're too much, you know.
So. Yep, they're a lot. And they saw ichneumonid wasp, those big ones with a super long ovipositor, looks like a tail. I saw a toad that was clearly most of the way done eating one the other day. So only just out of the corner of its little toad mouth, you could see the ovipositor and the rest of it had stuffed in there.
Oh my God.
It was great. A good meal for a toad. And I love that they've been using Merlin to catch...
Yeah.
Birds.
Yes. I love that because we don't want and they don't want anyone to think that they are hunting for birds, you know, or that there's anything bad happening to the birds, but they're just finding out. And honestly, there's no better way to feel like a kid than use that Merlin app. And suddenly you're like, what? I heard that. Oh, look, Merlin says this. Oh, you know, and then It has taken me a while, but then I start to be able to hear them myself. And as you had mentioned in the phenology report, hand in hand with that is that bird cast. I love seeing how many birds travel overnight through our region and what we might be seeing. And it's very grounding to hear all this stuff.
It is, yeah. And for folks who haven't used the Merlin app, it's put out by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's an app you put on your phone and you can just hit record. It will listen to the sounds around you, and if there are bird calls, it will tell you which birds are calling and like pop up a little species name. And it's, again, the learning curve for this job has been incredibly steep, and Merlin has been a huge help for me just learning to identify birds by ear. Anytime you have a chance, just sit outside for a little while with the app running and notice what birds are around you.
It's yeah.
Wonderful thing.
So much better than TikTok.
Yes.
All right. That's Charlie. That is Charlie Mitchell, our phenology coordinator. Thanks for your time today and the reports.
Thanks for having me. See you soon.
See ya.